Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
Welcome to True Crime to Go. What can I get for you?
I don't even really know what I want, but something just crazy, shocking, and delightfully evil.
Pull up to the second window and we'll see you next crime.
Welcome to True Crime to Go. I am John, here with Jamie. Sometimes I start those and don't know where I'm going because this case is not delightfully evil. It's just plain evil.
Yeah, I think that's often the case. And honestly, that's what I do at actual drive-thrus. I think I know what I want, but then when you see the menu, they do a great job marketing. And yeah, let's supersize it. That's usually where I end up.
I've spent a lot of my life here in the last few months going through drive-thrus because of these stupid apps that give you rewards and like really deep discounts on products.
And I'm sorry.
Yeah. So, but I don't have to order. I just tell them my number and they give me my drink.
Minimal human contact. That sounds right up my alley. But this one is not that necessarily. Why don't you?
And talk about contact. We're going to talk about contact quite a bit.
Didn't want to go there.
We're going to dive into one of the most compelling and perplexing cases from around the world. And that is the unsettling story of Gregory Glenn Biggs. This is a case that shocked the nation and especially the Fort Worth, Texas area because of its disturbing details. And it raised some pretty profound questions. So Gregory Glenn Biggs was born on August 16th, 1964. Throughout his adult life, he faced several mental health challenges, but remained a dedicated father and a hard worker. He was a mason in the construction industry. And in my brief time of doing that, I can tell you it is indeed hard work.
It's hard work.
By October 2001, Gregory unfortunately found himself homeless in Fort Worth, Texas, though his family noted that he was striving to improve his circumstances, and the events that took place and what we're going to talk about today would definitely alter his course.
On the night of October 26, 2001, 25-year-old Shantae Jawan Mallard, a nursing assistant, spent her evening consuming a combination of alcohol, marijuana, and ecstasy.
Those are three things that get you going in total opposite directions.
Yeah, they get you going, they stop you, slow you down, and it's, got to be an interesting combination of what your body decides to do with all that. And unfortunately, she decided to get behind the wheel of her Chevy Cavalier. As she drove through Fort Worth, Gregory Biggs was walking along the roadway. In a tragic turn of events, Mallard's vehicle struck Biggs with such force that he became lodged in the windshield, severely injured, but he was still alive.
This is absolutely crazy. There are pictures that I have seen of this, and it's not like, I don't even know how to describe it, but basically from the waist up, is inside the car, and from the waist down is sticking straight out of the windshield, like completely, like standing straight up. So it is this awful, awful scene. And her decision that follows this is really what just defies comprehension in my mind. She did not stop. She did not try to seek any kind of help nor medical assistance. Instead, she drove all the way home with him still embedded in her windshield. And then she parked the car in her garage. And over the next 2 to 3 days, she would visit the garage multiple times, but took no action to seek help for him. And again, he did not die at the time of the result of this injury. He was alive for a while. It's insane. Tragically, he did succumb to his injuries during this period. But I think that it is at least plausible that he could have survived if immediate help was given to him.
Absolutely. And this is kind of the definition of sweeping something under the rug, right? You got something you need to work on your desk. You don't want to look at it anymore. You just kind of put it away for now and assume it'll take care of itself. But she tried to do that with a body sticking out of her windshield, which is so wild. Seeking to conceal her actions, she contacted her friend, Cleet Jackson, and his cousin, Herbert Tyrone Cleveland. And together, they removed Biggs's body from the car and transported it to a nearby park where they abandoned it. In an attempt to destroy evidence, they also set fire to parts of the vehicle to make it not show up as having, you know, blood and DNA and stuff in it.
Absolutely insane. I'm sorry to cut you off there, but I was going to say this case would probably have remained unsolved if not for what happened next. Apparently, 4 months later, Mallard was at a party and she was hanging out with friends and she was laughing and, in fact, boasting about this incident, reportedly saying, quote, "I hit this white man." And yeah, thankfully, an acquaintance of her reported this to the authorities, which ultimately led to her arrest.
Yeah, and it was very nonchalant. Like you said, she was laughing about it. It's not like if I hit a squirrel, I'm not out there laughing about it. And she hit a human being. So she was arrested. And during the trial, medical experts testified that had Mallard sought immediate medical attention for Biggs, he would have survived. The jury found her guilty of murder. And in June of 2003, she was sentenced to 50 years in prison with the possibility of parole in 2027. Her accomplices, Jackson and Cleveland, got sentences of 10 and 9 years, respectively, for covering this up and tampering with evidence.
The tragic death also brings about some, I guess, if there's anything positive in this, it's a lesson of forgiveness. So Biggs's son, Brandon, filed a wrongful death lawsuit, which was settled out of court, and he was able to publicly forgive and extend his forgiveness to Mallard and the others involved. In a heartening gesture, inmates from across the country raised $10,000 to fund a college scholarship for Brandon, who was pursuing a pastoral ministry study degree at the time.
Yeah, and it goes back to the drug use, I think. She was engaging in some risky activities that led to a lapse in judgment, but at some point she came down from that high, John, and she saw him in the garage and continued not to help him. So this is an action, or maybe inaction, that's beyond what I could fathom doing myself. Obviously, everybody has their breaking point of some kind, I guess, and hers was, she had a very low bar for let's just let this white guy die.
Man, I don't want to eat up too much of y'all's time, but I do have a crazy story of my own, and it made me think about this case in particular. So we live on a really, I don't know, a country road that takes us into town. It's not a curvy road. It's definitely a two-lane road, but there's no sidewalk whatsoever, and there's been a jogger at night. Have you encountered this guy?
I have.
This guy is
almost in a bad way.
This road is not one that you should walk on, let alone run on at night.
Not only are there no sidewalks, there's also, like, directly off the road is a ditch. Like, yeah. There's no grass on it. There's nowhere to get off the road.
Right. So the other night I was driving along, and thankfully, at the very last minute, this guy had a really, really dim flashlight on his chest as he was running. But it was completely dark. It was snowing outside. Like, it was just not safe for this guy to be doing his activity. But I thought to myself, what would I do? And the only response is stop, render help, and call the authorities. Yeah. Even if that means I go to prison, I don't want another human to die because I just left him out in the cold.
Absolutely. I mean, there is a right and wrong thing to do there. And she did the most wrong thing that she could have possibly done. But thankfully they were able to, I guess her mouth got her in trouble as she blabbed about it. I'm glad she's being held accountable. I don't know. Give me a couple of years to think about the parole thing and I'll let you know where I'm at. She's not eligible for 2 years.
Kudos to her friend who decided to call that in, because there's so many cases that could be solved if people would just share what they've overheard over the years.
Completely agree, guys. This has been an interesting one and has been a crime story in 10 minutes or less.
Would you like crime with that?
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media. Igniting conversation.